All right, as I said, we're going to be in Nehemiah chapter 4. Nehemiah chapter 4. And we are going to be covering all of Nehemiah chapter 4. So I told you we had to get started. We had to get going. So here's what I want to do. I want to begin by making a statement that'll kind of frame things in for our conversation tonight. And here's the statement I want to make. Everybody loves the idea of building something meaningful. We all love the idea of building something meaningful. Like, we love the excitement of something new. We love the excitement of a new project, of a new beginning, of a new something. You just fill in the blank, whatever it is. You know, we set out to do this great work. I'm trying to get am I echoing back there a little bit? All right, let's try this. Okay, so we love this idea of a new project, a new beginning, a new something. Like, we set out to do this great work and we know that it's going to be meaningful. But man, in the beginning, it's so easy to be excited. And then once things get rolling, then all of a sudden, things begin to take a toll on us. I was thinking about all the ways that this is true, and we could talk about it a lot of different ways. But we have the Awana leaders in here with us tonight. And so think about this. Think about that first Wednesday night of Awana. It doesn't matter what kind of day you have. It doesn't matter what your kids do, how bad it is at work. It doesn't matter anything. Like, it's a new beginning. You're fired up. You're pumped up. You're right. And you've got all this zeal and you're looking forward to it and you're giving yourself fully. And then, man, just, you know, as time goes on, as you know, you move from August into September and September into October and October into November. And then just all of a sudden, the newness kind of begins to wear off. And life begins to settle in. And let's just be honest. Some of them rugrats, they're difficult. And they begin to test your nerves. See, their parents are in here. They know. But all of a sudden, like, things begin to just wear us down. And it's like, okay, well, here we are. And it things that we know it's meaningful, but over time we begin to wear down. Think about, I have this conversation every time I do a wedding. And I look at the bride and I tell her, and I look at the groom, he's kind of oblivious. But I'm like, look, I want you to understand, weddings are easy. And they look at me like I got three heads in comparison to marriage. And we know that's true, but just think about, like, it's so true. Like, we set out in marriage, we have all these ideas and this new beginning, and we're going to start this new life together. And then, like, in the first day, week, month, and then all of a sudden you wake up one day and you're like, Mr. Brian was right. Like, I really am married to a downright sinner who is selfish and cares only about themselves. And it's like, and now things are being exposed in a way that they've never been exposed before, right? And so it sounds great. It is great. Think about when you first decided to have your first child. And you're like, man, I'm going to have this child. They're so cute. And this vision of raising a child that's going to love the Lord and serve Him. And man, it's going to be great. And then all of a sudden you have a kid. And in the beginning, it's awesome. They're so cute. And then they wake up in the middle of the night. Right? You go out for your first outing and they have a blowout. And then they wake up the next night, and the next night, and the next night, and the next night, and they're puking everywhere and they're pooping everywhere, and all of a sudden now it's like all the newness is worn off. Reality has settled in, and you begin to think, man, this sounded good. Some of you in the beginning of this year, this is the last one and then I'm done. Some of you in the beginning of this year, you're like, man, we're going to read through the Bible, the entire Bible in a year. And you're like, man, I can't wait. This is so exciting. And then about 2-3 months in, you're going, I don't know if I can do this. Like, it sounded good in the beginning, didn't it? Like, it sounded good in the beginning, but then what about those days where you're tired, where life is hard, where, man, it's like, and all of a sudden you realize, okay, well, wait a minute. So what happens? We get excited. We like the idea of something new, something meaningful. But what about when criticism comes? What about when exhaustion settles in? What about when life gets hard? What about when things don't go according to our plans? When our expectations that we've had aren't met? What about when it gets frustrating? What is it that happens? And so oftentimes what happens is discouragement begins to settle in. That's what happens. Discouragement settles in. And people rarely quit or even want to quit at the beginning of something. The moment that we start something is not the moment that we decide to quit. Marriages don't collapse in a day, right? It's when we get discouraged. Diets don't end the first day you start them. I mean, you can only start a diet on a Monday. So, I mean, you can't technically start, right, until Monday. But the point is that when do diets end? When all of a sudden we're not seeing the progress we thought we should be making, when the scale's not moving, when the waistline's not moving. It's like we start getting discouraged, and we all know what it's like to set out to do something and then discouragement just begins to settle in when things aren't going the way in which we think they should. And people begin to slowly lose heart. As things compound, what happens is we begin to lose heart. We get tired. We get criticized. We get overwhelmed. And there's this temptation to give up, to settle, to stop building the wall, right? And that's where we find ourselves tonight. So Nehemiah is teaching us something. I think it's important for us to understand that Nehemiah is teaching us what to do when discouragement and opposition try to stop the work of God in our lives. Here's what you need to understand. We know this in our minds, but somehow in our hearts when it comes, we resist it and we don't know what to do. Opposition and discouragement is inevitable. It will come. If you're not in the midst of it right now, it is peeking around the corner. Opposition and discouragement will come. We understand that. We nod our heads and we agree with that. But the point is when it comes, it's like we're shocked that it's here. And we're like surprised in some way, shape, or form. But Nehemiah 4, what it does is it teaches us what to do. And I'm going to be, I thought as I was preparing for tonight, I mean, I don't know any other way than to be so extremely practical tonight. So I hope it's very, very helpful for you. But it's like, we're not going off into some deep theological discussion. We are going to be extremely practical because that's what the text, that's what's going on here in Nehemiah chapter 4. So let's begin Nehemiah chapter 4, starting in verse 1. Now when Sanballat heard that we were building the wall, he was angry and greatly enraged, and he jeered at the Jews. And he said in the presence of his brothers and of the army of Samaria, "What are these feeble Jews doing? Will they restore it for themselves? Will they sacrifice? Will they finish it up in a day? Will they revive the stones out of the heaps of rubbish and burned ones at that?" And Tobiah the Ammonite was beside him, and he said, "Yes, what are they building? If a fox goes up on it, will it break down their stone wall?" And so what we see here is think about the discussion that we had. Now, we had a Wano Awards last week, but 2 weeks ago. And so we had this discussion about the people of God doing the work of God in community, together in community, and everyone was doing their part. Remember that? And so everybody had their specific, and really that whole chapter is about Nehemiah just delegating responsibilities to different people. People have different gifts, and some people are rebuilding gates, and some people are rebuilding this section of wall, and some people are rebuilding this section of wall. But everybody has their responsibilities, and everybody's participating and using their gifts to accomplish the work that God has them to do. And now what we see is we see opposition come in from Sanballat and Tobiah. And this isn't the first encounter. If you think back to chapter 2, this is on your handout. Remember in Nehemiah chapter 2, it says, "But when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite, servant of Geshem and the Arab heard of it, they jeered at us and despised us and said, 'What is this thing that you're doing? Are you rebelling against the king?' Then I replied to them, 'The God of heaven will make us prosper, and we, his servants, will arise and build, but you have no portion or right or claim in Jerusalem.' And so we see this isn't the first time that they've been poking fun, that they've been, well, they're about to step up their game. Here they are again. And what is it? Here's the question. I got lots of questions tonight, but what the question I have is, what is it that prompted them? What prompted their opposition? And I believe it was progress. I believe it was the progress that was being made on the wall, the progress that Nehemiah and all the people were making. And so we see that opposition often increases when progress is being made. Opposition often increases when progress is being made. And I would even take it a step further. When people or the enemy feels threatened by someone or something, that's when they amp up their game. So the enemy rarely attacks things that are dead. The enemy rarely attacks people that aren't flourishing for the kingdom. There's no need. And so what happens is when the people of God begin to flourish, when the things of God begin to move forward, when begin to make a difference, then the enemy will then step in and opposition will present itself. And so we see this momentum, and what happens? Criticism appears, resistance increases, discouragement, it opens the door for discouragement. That's what happens. And so in this moment, they're beginning to make a difference in opposition. Opposition comes. And so, as I mentioned a while ago, is that people are often surprised by opposition, but Nehemiah teaches us we should expect it. We should expect it. And I would say that presence of opposition isn't proof that we're outside of the will of God. Now, I'm not saying that sometimes isn't true, that sometimes opposition comes because we are outside of the will of God, but I think sometimes we think that if we're walking in the will of God, if we are doing what God's called us to do, then that means that like every light turns green before we get to the intersection. That's what we think. We think that there's never going to be any pushback. There's never going to be any opposition. That it's just going to be green light, green light, green light, green light. Doors are going to open just as we get right to it. Like that's not necessarily the way it works. And sometimes the fact that there's opposition isn't proof that we're outside of the will of God. It's actually the opposite, that it's proof that we are inside the will of God. Right? And so we need to understand that. So the enemy attacks in verses 2 and 3. So what do they say? He says, these feeble Jews, will they restore it for themselves? Will they sacrifice? Will they finish it up in a day? Will they revive the stones out of the heaps of rubbish and burn ones at that? And then he's got his little sidekick. Every bully's got a sidekick, right? Well, Tobiah is his sidekick. And he's just like, he's like, what he said. And if a fox goes up on the wall, it's going to fall down. And you're like, what are you talking about? And so they're just, man, they're just coming at him. Coming at him, coming at him, coming at him. I want to have a quick conversation about criticism for just a minute. Because I think it's important. See, we can't just convince ourselves that all criticism is from the enemy, because that's not true. That's not true. All criticism, there's this thing called constructive criticism, right? But a lot of times we think all criticism comes from the enemy just simply because we don't like it. We don't like to be criticized. We don't want to be criticized. And so not all criticism is intended to harm us or to hurt us or to discourage us. And as believers, we've got to develop the ability to measure the value or worth of criticism. It's not all bad. And we shouldn't dismiss all criticism because just saying, well, it's the enemy attacking me. Must be the devil. Well, hold on a minute. We should have something, some way to measure criticism. And I think, you know, just a quick conversation, I think, would be super helpful tonight. So sometimes, you know, we realize that the best course of action is to ignore criticism, but sometimes the best course of action is to learn from it. And so we need to listen with discernment. We need to consider the source and the motive. So we'll begin with a conversation about the source. We must consider the source. When it comes to criticism, we want to ask the question, who is it that's saying what's being said? Who's it coming from? That's a very important question. Is it somebody I know and love, or is it someone who is opposed to me? So a good way to think about it, Criticism from the trenches is different from criticism from the sidelines. Criticism from the trenches is different from criticism from the sidelines. My question is, who's criticizing it? Is it the people that are in the trenches with Nehemiah? Is that where the criticism is coming from? Who's it coming from? Somebody on the outside. See, it's not coming from somebody who's in the battle with them. It's coming from somebody who's sitting on the bleachers. And the truth is, the loudest critics are never the ones that are in the trenches with us. They're not. They're not the ones carrying the bricks. They're not the ones mixing the mortar. No, that's not what's going on here. And that's usually who the loudest critics are. And I would say another way for you to determine it. So just ask yourself the question, is this person in the trenches with me? Or are they just in the bleachers? Or are they in the work? Or are they just watching the work? Who is it that they run with? Because you know what happens? Critics run with other critics. You know what happens with people who are on mission with God? They run with people who are on mission for God. And so I'm going to be very attentive to the people that are on the same mission and passion that I have with me. And it's going to be a very different conversation. The second point is that we must consider the motive. To which you would say, well, how do we know people's motives? How do we know people? And look, we could say a lot of things about how to discern this, but I'm just giving you two because I want to be very focused in our time together so that you take things away. And so I would say, what's the source and what's the motive? Well, how do we know people's motives? How do we know? And really, it's just some simple questions that we can ask ourselves. Is the criticism meant to discourage you from the work? What is the criticism here in Nehemiah chapter 4 meant to do? To discourage them from the work that God has called them to do. Right? Yes. And so we can see, okay, well, how do we know the motive? What's the motive? Well, it's meant to discourage them. Not to make the people more effective in the work that God's calling them to do. Not to make them better in the work that God is calling them to do. See, some correct to strengthen and others criticize to discourage. And if we're honest, it's real easy. If we just stop and look and think, it's real easy to discern those two. You know the same way that I know. You know the people who are for you. You know the people that are for you. So if the people that are for you come to you and have something to say or something to discuss, well, that's a different conversation than someone who is not for me. And what they have to say is going to be received differently than someone who is just seeking to discourage me from the work that God has called me to do. I don't care what they say. I don't care. Guess what? Nehemiah didn't care what they said. There was work to be done. You are not for me. You are not with me. And so I don't have anything. I don't care anything about what you're saying. You seek merely to distract me and discourage me from the work that God is calling me to do. One of the ways I like to think of it is when I know somebody's for me, when somebody has relational equity in my life. Do you know what I mean by that? When somebody has walked with me through the trenches, when somebody has been there, when somebody has walked with me through whatever it is. When my wife can say things to me that none of you can say. None of you. Right? Because it's different when it comes from her. When we have relational equity, it opens the door for us to begin to be able to say things that need to be said. And so, and sometimes, look, there's sometimes where I feel like a conversation needs to be had with somebody, and some of us in the room need to recognize and realize this. Just because something is true doesn't need that needs to come from you. If you don't have relational equity in whatever person that you feel like you need to say something to or about, then let somebody else do that. let somebody else do it. Because there's times where I'm like, I feel like maybe something needs to be said, but I don't have the relational equity in that relationship to be able to say those things. And so I need to have discernment there. And so if somebody doesn't have that kind of relational equity in my life, then it's going to affect how I receive what they're going to say. That's just how it works. And so we see that Nehemiah, he sees the source. He sees the motive. Now, how does he respond? How does he respond? He does two significant things in response to the criticism. Nehemiah responded with prayer and persistence. Prayer and persistence. First, he prays. Look in verse 4. The very first thing. So what do? They're jeering. They're poking fun. They're harassing. They're saying all these negative things. They're criticizing. They're saying all these things. And what is Nehemiah's response? Does he fight back? Does he even acknowledge that they exist in their presence? Hear, O our God, for we are despised. Turn back their taunt on their own heads and give them up to be plundered in a land where they are captives. Do not cover their guilt and let not their sin be blotted out from your sight, for they have provoked you to anger in the presence of the builders. What does he do? He immediately brings it to God. His first response, his initial response, was to fight the battle through prayer. To fight the battle through prayer. Prayer is such an underutilized weapon in a believer's life. We typically in that moment will step in and begin to defend ourselves. And what Nehemiah does is he says, you know what? You have the ability to defend me, God, to defend the work that we're doing. It's your work. It's not our work. And so would you just handle this business and take care of it? And that's essentially what he does. He just brings it before the Lord and he says, you fight the battle, Lord. You fight the battle. And we've already seen this. I mean, I want you to just think about how Nehemiah, prayer is so ingrained in his life. All the ways that we've seen this leading up to this moment. And here we're going to see it again in just a few verses. The first thing that he does is pray. And so before Nehemiah ever said a word to the critics, he talked with God about it. That's what he did. And the first thing for you and me that we should do before we ever step in and say a word to our critics is we should bring it before the Lord in prayer. We should bring it before the Lord in prayer. So secondly, he persisted. He persisted. Look what he says in verse 6. He says, so we built the wall. There's several verses in here that I'm just like, man, like it's so just, you know, just say this and keep moving. So we built the wall. So these knuckleheads are seeking to discourage. They're talking all this smack and they're like, you know what we did? We prayed and we just built the wall. That's what we did. God called us to build the wall, so you know what we did? We built the wall. And all the wall was joined together to half its height, and for the people had a mind to work. Again, it's so common. It's so natural for you and for me to defend ourselves, right? To take whatever attack it is personally, to retaliate. That's what we typically do. We retaliate. Now, whether we retaliate in the moment, in person, or we go to social media and retaliate, we retaliate. And so what we need to do is we need to pray and persist in the work that God's called us to do. We don't need to defend ourselves. Listen to me, Christian. You do not need to defend yourself. You have a defender. You have an advocate in the Lord. So stop trying to defend yourself and retaliate and make things right. And we don't have to do that. We don't have to do that. Just because, look, Nehemiah and the people of God, they were in the right place. They had the right motive. They were doing all the right things. They had every right to justify what they were doing. And they persisted in the work that God was calling them to do. That's how they responded. They let their actions speak for themselves, and they let God defend them on their behalf, right? And so the question I have for us tonight is, what do we do? Let's rephrase that. What do you do when a harsh word is spoken against you? What do you do when a harsh word is spoken about you. Don't beat yourself up. Now you know what to do. What should we do? What do we do? We should stop and reflect and ask ourselves, like, what is my natural tendency? What do I do? Do I take it personal? Do my feathers get all ruffled up? Do I go around talking about it, complaining about it? What do I do when a harsh word is spoken about me or to me? And so then the question is, what should we do? It's the wrong thing to fight every critic. And this is one of the things that God just impressed upon me this week as I was preparing for this, is that what happens is when we defend ourselves, our energy goes to the wrong place. It goes to the wrong place. We spend all our time, our energy, our passion defending ourselves instead of building the wall. You know what you got to do to defend yourself? You got to set the brick down. You got to put the mortar down. You got to climb down off the wall, and then you got to address what just happened. Progress has stopped. Progress has stopped. And so if we address every critic, then what ends up happening is progress is stunted. We have to set those things down. Nehemiah doesn't even acknowledge them. He doesn't even acknowledge them. He doesn't stoop to their level. He rises above it. He gives it to God. So does that mean, now this is true, sometimes when we ignore, they just go away. Sometimes that does happen. When you don't give them any attention, then sometimes the critics, they'll just be like, all right, I'm not getting a rise out of him. I go on to somebody else and something new. But that's not always the case. That's not always the case. And what we're going to see here is it actually gets worse. It actually gets worse. Verse 7. But when Sanballat and Tobiah and the Arabs and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites heard that the repairing of the walls of Jerusalem was going forward and that the breaches were beginning to be closed, they were very angry and they plotted together to come and fight against Jerusalem and to cause confusion in it. So what happens here? Well, criticism doesn't die down. It actually intensifies. And think about it, the size of the group grows. See, it's just, previously, it's just Sanballat and Tobiah. Now he's got all his compadres. He's like, he's bringing other people in. The group has grown. And now it's no longer just criticism. Now they're plotting to fight against them, to cause them harm. To cause them harm. Right? And then if you keep reading, verse 9, we see, and we prayed to our God and set a guard against us as a protection day and night. So what is Nehemiah's response again? It's to pray. He's threatened, and his response is to pray. It's to pray. Verse 10. In Judah, it was said, the strength of those who bear the burdens is failing. There's too much rubble by ourselves. We will not be able to rebuild the wall. And our enemies said, They will not know or see till we come among them and kill them and stop the work. At that time, the Jews who lived near them came and directed from all directions and said that to us 10 times, you must return to us. You must return to us. And so what we see here is now the Jewish people from around there, the ones, they weren't necessarily working on the wall, but they're saying, hey, come home. Come home. You're going to get yourself killed out here. It's not working. It's not worth it. How many times did they do that? What did it say? 10 times. It's not like they came and said, hey, don't do this. You're wasting your time. You're going to get yourself killed. 10 times they continued to come, time and time and time and time again. They were met with criticism. They were met with opposition. And they were met with negativity. And what we know is that Where did I get off here? All right. You cannot constantly hear negativity without some of it rubbing off on you. You cannot. It's impossible. It's impossible. I remember when I worked at the fire department, and When I worked at the fire department, firemen are just negative. They're just negative. So many of them are negative, and all the retired firemen in the room are like, yeah, I know exactly what you mean. It's just negative. They complain about everything. It's like, I mean, you can't win for anything. I can remember occasionally I would get sent out to other stations because somebody would call in sick or something, and we had negative firemen, and then we had the most negative person I've ever met in my entire life. And there would be times I would have to go out to that fire station, and I would just have to go in the back room by myself and like pull out my Bible and be like, Lord, I need some positiveness right now. Like, encourage me in some way, shape, or form. When I left there, when I left that morning, I'm like, I feel like I have just been influenced by, you know what I'm saying, though? You get around negative people, and then it begins to wear on you. It begins to wear us down. And we know that what you hear repeatedly eventually shapes what you believe. It eventually shapes what you believe. We'll talk about this more in just a minute, but here's what I want us to understand. Sometimes that's external. We're influenced by the negativity around us. It begins to wear us down. We begin to believe the negativity. We begin to fall into and give in to the negativity. We begin to complain with them. We know what that's like. You've been around and you're like, how did I get sucked into all of this? How did I even get sucked in? Well, we're influenced and impacted. Like, it rubs off on us. And what happens is then eventually it begins to shape what we believe. And then it begins, whatever shapes our mind and what we believe, it then impacts and shapes what we end up doing. Sometimes that's external and sometimes that's internal. Sometimes it's the fight between our ears. And sometimes we, you know, as believers, we just rehearse over and over again the fear, the criticism, the bad news, the what ifs, the condemnation. And we just play that over and over and over and over again in our head, and more than we would the promises of God, the things that we know to be true in Scripture. Tony said this past Sunday, it's like sometimes we just got to tell ourselves, shut up, you're adopted. I mean, that's the whole premise. It's like, shut up, you're adopted. Shut up, you're adopted. I guarantee you there are people in this room that you've been walking around talking to yourself this week. Shut up, I'm adopted. Shut up, I'm adopted. But the reason is like we have to fight that negativity. And sometimes it's external, but sometimes it's internal. And what's happening is everything is piling up for the people of God here. They're feeling overwhelmed. And maybe you've been there where you just want to run away. Where you just can't take it anymore. You're asking questions like, man, like, is this worth it? It would be so much easier, this or that. And so what is Nehemiah going to do? What is he going to do? Well, I can tell you what he didn't do is he didn't ignore the discouragement. He didn't ignore the discouragement. See, he didn't deny the danger. He didn't stick his head in the sand and pretend like it wasn't there. He dealt with it. And I think these, as we go through the rest of this scripture, I think it's going to be very instructive for us in how to handle discouragement when it comes. And so I would say, firstly, unify your efforts toward the goal together. Unify your efforts toward the goal together. In verse 13, so in the lowest parts of the space behind the wall in the open places, I stationed the people by their clans, by their families. So he positioned them together as families with their swords and with their spears and with their bows. And so he unifies them together. These clans means families. There's an enemy. Here's what we need to understand. There is an enemy, and it is not one another. We're not the enemy. The people in your family, they're not the enemy. There is an enemy, but it's not one another. We're meant to fight the enemy together as a family, not against one another. Not against one another. Here's what happens. In the beginning, this doesn't happen. But as we begin to get worn down, when discouragement begins to settle in our hearts, you know what ends up happening? We start seeing our spouse as the enemy. Right? We start seeing our children as the enemy. And why do we do that? Because we get discouraged, and then we get worn down, and we get frustrated, and all of a sudden now that, you know, we often take that out on the people that we love most, the people that are should be in the fight with us, that we should be in the fight with them together, we end up getting in fight with them. And so we fight one another instead of fighting the enemy. And so what he does is he stops everything that's going on. He said, hey, bring it in. Let's remember who the enemy is. Let's remember that we're on the same team. That we're in this together. We're not the enemy. Do you think we don't know this, but do you think there's grumbling on the wall? Do you think people are getting frustrated? Do you think people are saying things they probably shouldn't say, doing things to one another they probably shouldn't do because they're getting worn down and beat down by the fact and the threat of an enemy coming against them because of the discouragement? I feel like that is a 100% yes. And Nehemiah gathers everybody up and says, hey, bring it in. Look, families together. You're in this together. There's an enemy, but it is not you. And we're in this together, and we're going to fight this enemy. You and me, we're going to fight this enemy together as a family. So he rallies them together around this common goal. Look, your home should be one of the greatest sources of encouragement for the people underneath your roof. You have grown children, same thing. This church family should be one of the greatest sources of encouragement. 100%. And he's rallying them up and he's saying, hey, bring it in. Number two, he says, I would say direct your attention to the Lord. Direct your attention to the Lord. Verse 14. And I looked and arose and said to the nobles, of the officials, and to the rest of the people. I feel like, just letting y'all in my mind, I wish I had a Scottish accent to read this verse. I feel like this is kind of like a Braveheart moment, you know? Scottish, where you bring everybody in and he's like, you know, it's the big moment, the big speech. And he's like, do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord who is great and awesome, and fight for your brothers and your sons and your daughters and your wives and your homes. And he's saying, man, let's fight. And if I had a Scottish accent, I would have done it in the Scottish accent. I feel like it would have been more powerful, but that's all I got. So just South Mississippi, slow talking accent there. So look at what's going on. Look at all the rubbish and opposition and half-built wall and the Jews that are coming in and they're discouraging, you know, 10 times they've come to them and they're trying to discourage them over and over and over again. You can look around at the rubbish. You can look around at the discouragement. You can look around at the half-built wall. But what Nehemiah does is says, you're looking at the wrong things, guys. You're looking at the wrong things. You need to turn your attention to the Lord. The way that you're going to see things properly, the way you're going to see the rubbish and the discouragement and the all those things properly is when you see God properly. And in perspective to who He is, those things mean absolutely nothing. And so we should fix our attention. He said, look, don't be afraid. Remember the Lord. Remember the Lord. Remember who it is that's fighting for you. Remember how big your God is. I know these things. I know you're discouraged. I know it seems impossible. I know all these things. They feel real, but remember the Lord. Amen. Remember the Lord. Remember the Lord. That's what he's getting at. Remember his promises. Remember who he is. Remember how you've seen his faithfulness in your life over and over and over again. Stop and remember the Lord. See, they were persisting in the work, but there came a moment where Nehemiah realized, hey, we got to stop for just a minute. We got to refocus. We got to let the fog settle. We got to clear some things up before we can begin to move forward again. What do you do? What do you do when you get in a funk? What do you do? What do you do when you find yourself in a season of discouragement? Do you just keep doing things that you do all the time? Do you continue to just live your life the way that you always live it? Do the things that, or do you stop and do you do something different? Because it would be my advice to do what Nehemiah and the people of God did here, and I would do something different. You need to, is there a place that you go to when you just need to see things from a different perspective? I mean, I know I have a place. I ain't telling you where it is, but I have a place. There's somewhere I go, and I'll stay there as long as I need to. And I'll stop and let everything else just, and I'll go. Is there something that you do? Is there something that you do that's like, hey, I got to do something to change my perspective, to do things differently? Or do you just continue? I think so oftentimes we get in this rut and then we think, well, we're doing the same things just over and over again. It's going to sound, we're just magically going to come out of this season of discouragement. No, like there's things that we need to do. And there's this picture. Nehemiah is telling us and he's helping us. And one of the things that he does is he says, hey, we need to stop doing what we're doing for a minute. We need to gather over here and we need to figure some things out. We need to do something different. We need to go somewhere different. Right? Discouragement shrinks when God becomes large again in our thinking. And so we need to figure out what we need to do to make sure that God is as big in our hearts and our minds as He rightly is. And let that affect the way in which we think. And so Nehemiah redirects the focus from our enemies and obstacles and from ourselves towards God. Towards God. Number three, maintain a balanced attack of building and battling. A balanced attack of building and battling. Verse 15 says, when our enemies heard that it was known to us and that God had frustrated their plan, we all returned to the wall, each to his work. From that day on, half of my servants worked on construction and half held spears, shields, bows, and coats of mail. And the leaders stood behind the whole house of Judah who were building the wall. Those who carried burdens were loaded in such a way that each labored on the work with one hand and held his weapon in the other. And each of the builders had his sword strapped to his side while he built. The man who sounded the trumpet was beside me. This is one of the great images. I think one of the greatest images of Nehemiah. And it's really this picture of just working with one hand and battling with the other. Working with one hand and holding a weapon with the other. And he called him to action. He called him to action. And I think we need to guard against the subtle teaching that suggests that God does everything and you just step back and do nothing. That's not the Christian life. We're not working to earn something. So I want to be careful. And I'm not going to go on this because we don't have time for this. But we're not working to earn something. But there's effort to the Christian life that we are called to do things. He's called us to build something. He's called us to build our lives. He's called us to build something meaningful. He's called us to, the Christian life is a building life. We're building our faith. We're building our families. We're building our ministries. We're building our character. And at the same time, we're simultaneously fighting. We're fighting against sin. We're fighting against temptation. We're fighting against discouragement. Sometimes I hear people say, well, I really struggle with, and you fill in the blank. Maybe it's discouragement. I really struggle with discouragement. And the first thing that I always ask, like, well, are you really struggling with it, or are you just giving in to it? Yeah. I really struggle with this sin. Are we really struggling against it, or are we just doing it? Right? And so I would say, are you struggling? Are you in the fight? Are you in the fight? It's been said, be killing sin, or sin will be killing me. Be killing sin, or sin will be killing you. Here, I would take it a step further and say, be killing discouragement, or discouragement will be killing you. We got to be in the fight against discouragement because it keeps us from doing the work that God's called us to do. We walk around with our heads down. We give in to just this selfish desire. We give in just to defeat and all those things. Be killing sin or it'll be killing with you. Let's really be in the fight and be in the struggle, okay? Number four, determine a rallying point. Determine a rallying point. Verse 19. And I said to the nobles and to the officials and to the rest of the people, the work is great and widely spread, and we are separated on the wall, far from one another. In the place where you hear the sound of the trumpet, rally to us there. Our God will fight for us. So what was the rallying point? He's saying we were separated. We're out doing the work. And so we're working on different sections of the wall. And we're prepared, right? We've got our sword strapped. We've got our sword in one hand and we're building with the other. But we realize that, hey, we can't do this alone. And so when you hear the trumpet, if we're going to be attacked, we're going to sound the trumpet. And what are we going to do? We're going to come together. And so the rallying point, it's a place, but it's more than that. It's a principle too. And this is the principle. Don't try to fight alone. So many people in discouragement try to fight alone, in isolation. That is a huge mistake. You know what you need? You need somebody in your life who has relational equity. You need a rallying point that when you find yourself in a season of discouragement, what are you going to do? You're going to set up a lunch. You're going to pick up the phone. You're going to call whoever it is. The one who you know is for you, that has your back, that's going to be in the fight with you, that's going to be in the fight for you, who's going to be honest with you, who cares enough to do all those things. And you're going to go to him the same way that Jonathan was for David. I mean, we just recently read through this. The same way that he was for David. When David was discouraged, he would go to Jonathan. When the attacks of the enemy, when discouragement settles in, we need to have somebody that is for us that we can go to. We can't do it alone. We absolutely cannot do it alone. And sometimes, again, those attacks and the discouragement, sometimes they're external and sometimes they're internal. Number five, develop a serving others ministry. Develop a serving others ministry. Look in verse 21. So we labored at the work, and half of them held their spears from the break of dawn until the stars came out. I also said to the people at that time, let every man and his servant pass the night within Jerusalem, that they may be a guard for us by night, and may labor by day. So what's going on here? They're serving one another. They're caring for one another. They're putting others before themselves. You want to know how to be miserable? You want to know how to stay where you are in your season of discouragement? Serve yourself. Think only of yourself. Stay in your own head. But you flip it around and you start serving others, then all of a sudden you realize, well, wait a minute. Right? You put others before yourselves. When you think only of your own needs and desires and wants and pleasures, you're setting yourself up for failure. You're setting yourself up for failure. So the best way to fight discouragement is to serve someone. And so here's a question I have for you, and this is not intended to make those who serve to feel guilty like they should do more. That's not what this is about. This is intended to make those who don't serve anyone at all to stop and reflect and be mindful. That's what this is about. So think about it. Just this week, how much of your life will be spent serving other people? And I don't care if you're 18 years old or 85 years old. How much of your life will be spent serving other people? Because there's ways for us to serve. And God has called us to serve. How will we invest in other people? How will we care for other people? What will that look like? But I know that that's what God has called us to. And then number six, I would say, refuse to give up. refuse to give up. Verse 23. So neither I nor my brothers nor my servants nor the men of the guard who followed me, none of them took off our clothes. Each kept his weapon at his right hand. And you're thinking, well, I'm glad they didn't take off their clothes. Right? I'm glad you got your clothes on. I mean, what they're saying is like that they didn't even, it made me think of the fire department. You know, when you're at the fire department, you sleep with your clothes on. You're ready at all times. And so they were ready at all times to have one another's back. They were ready to do the work if they were called. They were ready to respond if they were needed. They didn't even take their clothes off to clean them. I mean, they were so committed to the work that was being done, and they weren't going to give up. Despite the mockery and the threats and the fatigue and the fear, they kept building and praying and serving and trusting and doing all these things and showing up. And the enemy understood something in Nehemiah chapter 4. And I think it's one of his greatest strategies today as well. And this was his strategy. If the enemy couldn't destroy the people, maybe he could discourage them enough to make them quit. If he couldn't destroy, and listen, child of God, he can't destroy you. He can't destroy you. But he can discourage you enough to leave you ineffective for the kingdom of God. And that's what he was seeking to do here in Nehemiah chapter 4. See, the enemy whispers, it's too hard. It's too hard. You're too tired. This isn't working. What's the point? Why keep trying? God's people kept building anyway. They kept building anyway. Right? And so what we see here is that discouragement is real, but it doesn't have to win. It doesn't have to win. It doesn't have to win. And I know somehow my notes got out of order here, and I was like, what happened? Well, page 4 somehow ended up around page 6. So I know some of you OCD people, you can't stand it because you have some empty blanks on your handout. So let me just help you before we wrap this thing up, okay? All right? I don't want you to go home tonight and be like, what in the world happened? And Pastor Brian this and Pastor Brian that. All right. Nehemiah dealt with the real threat, not an imagined one. He dealt with the real threat, not an imagined one. Whenever the threat presented itself, he dealt with it. But he didn't create his own threat. He didn't create some narrative. And what happens is when stuff, when we find ourselves in opposition, when we find ourselves in discouragement, what we tend to do is we tend to create a bigger narrative than what's really in front of us. And so he addressed what was in front of him. He addressed the opposition that was coming. He didn't dream up all these what-if scenarios. He prayed, and then he did what was necessary. So if you're on the citizens of Socia and you see people breaking into your cars, you should pray, but you should also lock the car doors. Like, that makes sense. So he did what was necessary to do those things, right? And then the last blank, which isn't the last, but discouraged people magnify the rubble and lose sight of the vision. Lose sight of the vision. Discouraged people magnify the rubble and lose sight of the vision. All right. So here's how I would end things tonight. Here's what I would say. Don't quit. Keep praying. Keep leading your family. Keep serving others. Keep forgiving. Keep fighting sin. Keep your eyes on the Lord. Keep building whatever it is that God has called you to build. And remember, in the midst of all of this, that Nehemiah points us to a greater builder. one who was opposed, one who was rejected, one who was criticized, one who was mocked, one who was attacked, and he didn't quit. He endured the cross. He finished the work, and he secured our salvation. So let's pray. God, we thank you most of all for Jesus. We thank you for all that you have taught us in Nehemiah chapter 4. We're so very grateful, Lord. But ultimately, we're grateful for Christ above all else. Above all else. The only reason that we're able to fight discouragement in this life is because of him. And so thank you. I pray for everyone in this room who finds themselves in a place of discouragement. I pray that your word was instructive tonight. I pray that it was encouraging tonight. I pray that, God, that you would use it to bring about transformation and help us, Lord. Help us. Discouragement is real, but it doesn't have to win. It doesn't have to win. Because you win. You win. And so, Lord, help us to follow and to build our lives on the things that we've seen in your word tonight. It's in Christ's name we pray.